Man, this is intense. I will try to get through this without crying. I'm not making any guarantees. I have my tissue in my pocket just in case. My sobriety date is August 8th of 2017. I have a home group. It's the New Birth group meeting. We meet at 7:30 on Thursdays, and I have a sponsor, and I have worked through the steps, and I'm just here to share in a general way what it was like, how I got here, and what it's like now. So I guess a little background. Drug and alcohol abuse is found on both sides of my family. Both of my parents were addicts, and my mother passed away when I was 6 months old due to a drug-related incident. So growing up, you know, after that, my dad definitely needed a lot of help. He was still very much in his addiction. So, you know, I found a lot of love and support throughout my family after that. Eventually, my father did find some kind of sobriety, enough to be able to take care of me. And we were always very close, I think, surrounding, you know, the death of my mother. So it was just him and I for a really long time. And, you know, growing up, my father was always really, I don't know, open with me about the harms of addiction and what it could do. I don't know, it was kind of smooth sailing for the first several years. When I was around 9, he did tell me that he had a terminal illness. He had contracted HIV from sharing needles during his IV drug use. So that was the early 90s. And there wasn't as much history and science behind everything at that point. Shortly after that, he did relapse, and that relapse would last for a very long time. And, you know, after that, he always did the best that he could, but, you know, you can only put so much guidance when you're in active addiction. So I was very much kind of like a free range chicken. I knew where to go home to. I knew where the food was. I always had a roof over my head. I always had food. It's not that I went without the necessities, but, you know, as far as parenting, you know, it wasn't as strong as it could have been. But I always had kind of a small footprint. So it's not, you know, I wasn't really rebellious. I kind of just stuck close to home. But as I was growing up, I was always really attracted to my peers that were already getting into the scene of drugs and alcohol. It took me a really long time to partake in the festivities, but obviously I did, or I wouldn't be standing here. But I was always the one that, you know, kind of like reined them back in and like took care of them and, you know, told them that, you know, they probably shouldn't be doing that. It's humorous for me to look back on it all. But, you know, eventually I did I drank for the first time in high school, and it was some mid-grade shelf vodka. I can't really remember what brand it is, and I guess that doesn't really matter at this point, but you know, from the very get-go, I drank alcoholically. By the end of that night, I was holding my friend's hair while she was vomiting in one bucket, and I was drinking straight from the bottle in the other. And that's how my drinking was for the rest of it. I just, you know, I was a liquor drinker. I liked 100 proof dark liquor, and the quicker I could get it in my body, the better. And I didn't really drink to, you know, feel a part of or feel prettier or smarter or funnier. You know, I knew all those things weren't true. So I didn't need the alcohol to make me feel any of that. I wanted the effects produced by alcohol. I wanted my brain to stop. I wanted the chaos to stop. And, you know, the things at home that I couldn't control, I wanted that to stop and just, you know, find some kind of peace. And I would chase that for the rest of my drinking. And I never found peace. I can't say that there weren't, you know, quote unquote fun times when I drank, but I wasn't an overly social drinker either. I was perfectly fine being by myself in my room drinking, even as, you know, a young person starting out on my drinking career. I mean, I went to parties and I went around people and, you know, but I was usually hiding in their bathroom drinking, you know, and then after I drank all of their stuff, I would go out to my car and get my bottle that I brought with me. And I don't know. I wasn't a classy drinker. I wasn't, you know, the fun drinker. I just leave me alone, give me my bottle. And that was my end goal. I blacked out a lot. I passed out a lot. There's a lot of things that I was told afterwards that I had done, that, you know, I have no recollection of. And, you know, that along with a lot of other things would just get worse and worse as time went on. Eventually my father, when I was late teens, early 20s, did find sobriety. And I, you know, I think that's when he kind of started to zero in a little bit on my drinking not being normal and kosher. And he was probably one of the first people that kind of called me out and, you know, voiced concerns. And this is really even before it even started to take off. You know, I was still kind of quote unquote functioning at that point. But, you know, he tried to introduce me very early on to AA. And I, you know, I went to a couple of meetings with them and that was intense. I'm pretty sure I was intoxicated for most of them. It's very overwhelming to be in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting intoxicated. And that was my, you know, that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, but it would, you know, it would be several years before I would come back regularly. And, you know, as my drinking progressed, it was harder and harder to function as a normal human being. I, you know, I luckily never lost my job, even though I did get counseled. I had my car, I didn't run into legal issues, but all of those things should have happened. You know, it's only by the grace of God that they didn't happen. You know, that's not how my higher power saw that he needed to reach me. But, you know, the physicalness of it started to really get in the way. You know, it was hard to function. You know, there was a lot of emergency room visits. There was a lot of times that I, you know, couldn't get out of bed, and I would miss work because I was too hungover. And, you know, that started to eat in financially. Luckily, I somehow was always able to make rent and bills, but it was getting harder and harder. Somehow talking to my family, they didn't really zero in on that, but my dad did. And he really tried to, I guess, keep me on the straight and narrow. But, you know, there's only but so much he could do. And he understood that, being an addict himself. Lost my train of thought, sorry. He would try to get me to visit him, especially on the weekends. I think he realized that the weekends were kind of free game. I didn't work on the weekends typically. I at least had Sundays off. So there was one Saturday that I was over there, and you know, I finally, I'm sure after like weeks of him asking me to come over, graced him with my presence. And, you know, I had dinner and we watched a little bit of TV, and he kept on trying to get me to stay a little bit longer. But I knew I had to leave because I had to get to the liquor store, and the liquor store closes at 9. So, you know, I was like, nope, I gotta go. And I went home, and, you know, I drank, I ignored his phone call because I couldn't be bothered with that kind of hoopla. I was already where I wanted to be, and so I sent it to voicemail, and the next day, his spouse informed me that he was at the hospital. And by the time I got there, he was already intubated. And his vital organs started shutting down one by one. And I was his medical power of attorney, and the doctors said that there was nothing that they could do. And even if he were to be able to make it back, there was too significant of brain damage because of the lack of oxygen. So on March 8th, I signed the papers to take him off of life support. And for the next 7 or 8 months, my drinking accelerated to a point that I didn't even understand that it could go to. You know, I think I was very much trying to outrun something that you can't outrun. Grief is not something that you can push to the side. It will find you no matter what. There was no amount of liquor or drugs that I could have taken that would have stopped that. The mental and physical concerns definitely followed that with the amount that I was drinking. I started to learn to sleep on my side because I would frequently wake up choking on my own vomit. I started to vomit blood. I couldn't eat. I couldn't really walk. I couldn't drive. I would just, from the top of my head to the bottom of my toes, have just like these obnoxious tremors. If I would try to control the car, it would just veer back and forth. And, you know, I wouldn't be able to feed myself unless I had alcohol in me. But to get the alcohol in me, it made me ill. So it was just a back and forth thing. So I would just sit there basically on a daily basis and, you know, drink, get sick until I could get enough in me to calm my nerves, quote unquote. And, you know, mentally, I was not okay at all, which, you know, I assume most of us are not when we get here. I was having a lot of hallucinations, and, you know, my family definitely started to get concerned, especially my aunt. There was one day I don't have any recollection of this. She had to tell me most of this after I got into sobriety. But I guess I called her and I was very disoriented and I was babbling and not responding coherently. And she lives in Brandy Station and I was still in Fredericksburg. And they drove out to get me from Brandy Station. And on the way back, I started to seize and I stopped breathing, became unresponsive. They were passing the fire station and stopped and obviously got me to respond. And they took me to the emergency room. And the doctors told my aunt and uncle that, you know, my uncle is my blood. So he had just lost his brother months before, that I should not be breathing. I shouldn't have made it through with the amount of alcohol that was in my body. And they stabilized me and I refused treatment and I left the emergency room, somehow conned them to take me back home so I could get clothes. And I proceeded to put a couple of bottles of liquor in my bag and she left me the next day and came home and I was completely annihilated. And, you know, so she didn't know what to do, so she took me to a meeting. And the person leading the meeting saw the condition I was in and told my aunt that she needed to take me back to the emergency room. They stopped and got a couple of bottles of minis from the ABC store. And I you know, there's not a lot that I remember in those months following my father's death. But I remember getting, because it had been several hours since I had drank. And I remember getting my hands on those minis and just how desperate it was for me to get that liquor in me. It's just sad. I mean, that doesn't even like give enough description of it. But I was just so, it was like a life support at that point in my life. I guess figuratively and literally. It was the only line of defense that I had against anything. I had no tools in my tool belt to deal with anything that life was handing to me, but to drink and to not be able to get, because up until that point, there wasn't a time that I couldn't just drink. You know, there wasn't a time that I didn't try not to drink. I never had any kind of inkling to try to control my drinking. I drank, and that's how I drank, and I did for years. And you know, now I was in my aunt's van, and she quote unquote could control how much I drank, and she was only giving me those minis, and I was like, this isn't enough. I need like two more liters. But they took me back to the emergency room, and I was basically in the same condition that I was in the night before, because not much had changed, but I just added more alcohol to me. And they admitted me for a couple of days, and somehow they were able to get me a bed in rehab straight from the hospital. And I don't think that if it would have been any different way, I don't think that I would have went. I wasn't ready. I don't think that I came in here with the desperation that some people have. I didn't realize how jacked up my life was and how empty I was and how much I was hurting. I didn't realize any of that because I hadn't drawn a sober enough breath. You know, I was still trying to outrun. And I went to detox, and then I went to residential, and I kept on hearing that when I got out, I needed to go to a meeting, and I am good at rule following. So I got out and I went to a meeting. It was actually the one meeting over across from Safeway was the first meeting that I went to when I got out. And from there, I just followed what you guys said. I definitely needed a lot of guidance because I did not know what I was doing whatsoever. And the first, I don't know, year or two was pretty intense. I think it typically is for most of us. That was the most people I had been around in a really long time, except for going to work. So, you know, it was kind of like I had to like learn how to function in society again. And, you know, I can't recite the big book. I can't really tell you where things are in the big book. Some days I'm lucky if I remember the Lord's Prayer that I hear all the time. But, you know, I feel it. You know, I feel the recovery. You know, in time, maybe I'll be able to tell you where something is in the big book. If I don't, that's okay. Because, you know, I have the foundation. I know I need to reach out to people and build my relationship with my higher power and go to meetings and make sure that I'm checking in, you know, and I have several different people that I am learning to share with. and I think the rest of it all is more of, you know, a guiding with the heart. You know, because I know I'm an alcoholic. I know if I drink again, I may not be lucky enough to come back, especially with what I have shown myself in the past. And, you know, there's a lot of us that aren't lucky enough to get into these rooms. And I used to, you know, in the first, I don't know, couple of months, year, you know, wonder why I got a spot and somebody else didn't. And I was quickly told that that is not a question for me to ask. I don't need to understand that. So I stopped asking that. But any sense of self that I have, any sense of relationship that I have with people within this fellowship, outside of this fellowship, any relationship with a higher power that I have is thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. This program has saved my life in so many more ways than just breathing. This was probably the second or third meeting that I came to out of rehab. And when I drove up, it was down in the basement the very first day. And when I drove up with my aunt, pre-COVID, it felt like there was a lot more people that typically came. I'm not sure if that's just my mind. But my aunt drove up, I was like, nope. And she basically said, yep, and pushed me out of the van. but I would sit there probably for the first like 2 or 3 years and watch people come up and tell their story. And I'm like, there is no way that I could do that. And I knew there was no way. There was absolutely no way. But as time went on and I understood this program more, you know, I understood that, you know, one, it's an honor to be able to come up and share my story in hopes that something I say can reach somebody else. But, you know, I also have to give away what everyone has given to me. You know, because you guys didn't know me when I came in. And I definitely tried to hide. It didn't work. And, you know, having a less, you know, boisterous personality, I don't always get to communicate that much with people as some people do. And it just is another proof that Alcoholics Anonymous works. Because I, you know, in the first 2 or 3 years, I probably wouldn't have been able to get up here. And even if I would have been able to get up here, I wouldn't have understood, you know, the full circle of it all. I guess I'll talk about the steps real quick. working through the steps, I think the first several were, you know, quote unquote easy. And I did drag my feet a little bit on making my list. My sponsor definitely had to remind me that I needed to do that. And getting to the amends, my amends process, I made my amends process, I think, worse than it needed to be. I think most people do. I have a couple of financial amends. Those were relatively straightforward. It's amazing what bill collectors will do and how much they'll work with you if you tell them that you would like to pay them. I am successfully almost debt free. my personal amends, there were one or two that my sponsor and I felt were best to just leave where they are due to possible further harm. And, you know, most of my family and friends, they responded with open arms. I don't necessarily knew if I thought that they would like disown me or anything. But I think regardless of how you think the outcome's going to be, it's hard to go to somebody and say those things. I did do my own set of amends with my father. I think that one's still an ongoing situation for me. And I don't know if I will ever feel like it's completely closed. All he ever wanted for me in my life was for me to be happy. And I took so much from him and caused him a lot of pain and sadness. And to not be able to look him in the face and extend my apologies and say that I understand and ask if there's anything that I can do to make up for that. Really sucks. I don't know if there's any way around it, really. But it has taught me, if there is a situation or a conversation in my life that I am avoiding because it is uncomfortable or because I am afraid of the outcome, that it is best to approach it with open arms and pray to my higher power for guidance, to find the right words and understand that it'll be fine regardless. I don't think that my higher power does anything to still see ill fate against me. And there's a lot of times that, when I do something in sobriety, it is for my father. Because these are the things that he wanted, these promises that we read, that's what he was talking about. And I, in my alcoholic mind, I could not understand that. I did not know what happiness was. I didn't know what joy was. I didn't know what serenity or freedom. And I didn't understand any of that until I walked into these rooms, until I sat down with another alcoholic and worked steps. That's the only time that I have ever found any of that in my life. Because if it's left up to me, I bring the polar opposites to every situation. And it is a beautiful thing to be able to learn all of that and hopefully work with others for them to be able to see that. I've seen little bits and pieces of people growing and changing within the fellowship, and it is it's a situation. I don't think that normal society can understand how awesome it is to watch that from somebody. The fact that this program gives that to us is just something that we'll never be able to repay. So just for today, I will keep on coming back. I hope that it continues for years for me to be able to pay it forward. I think that's all I have. I almost made it.